From Variety, I'm Michael Schneider.
Space, a final frontier.
Lance Reddick didn't have any grand designs on becoming an actor. Actually, he wanted to be a musician. But the star of Bosch, Corporate, Fringe, The Wire, and countless other fan favorite series couldn't get enough of Star Trek as a kid.
You know, growing up, I kind of wanted to be Captain Kirk.
Yeah.
So to see him up against somebody who was really his match, if not his superior in every way.
Yeah.
It's just cool. But you know, whenever I'm asked about kind of my early influences on kind of what made me want to be an actor,
yeah,
it was William Shatner.
On this edition of the podcast, we talked to Lance Reddick about his favorite episode of TV ever, the classic Star Trek installment, Space Seed, and the actor's unusual path to fame. It's my favorite episode.
My favorite episode's about to start.
Favorite episode.
Coming real, it's the next episode.
Written by Gene L. Coon and Kerry Wilbur and directed by Mark Daniels, the Star Trek episode Space Seed first introduced the iconic character Khan, played by Ricardo Montalban. The episode aired during Season 1 of Star Trek on February 16, 1967. Space Seed follows the USS Enterprise as it comes across the SS Botany Bay, a ship featuring superhumans who have been in suspended animation for centuries. Khan, the leader, takes advantage of ship historian Marla MacGyver's to attempt to take over the ship. Kirk eventually exiles Khan and MacGyver's, and of course we see the return of the character in the 1982 film The Wrath of Khan.
I'm sorry, Captain, I was lost in thought. My door. Locked from outside, a guard posted.
Unusual treatment for Khan, Noonien, and Singh.
You identified me with your computer system, I imagine.
I'd like those answers now. First, the purpose of your starflight.
A new life, a chance to build a world. Other things I doubt you would understand.
Why? Because I'm not a product of controlled genetics.
Captain, although your abilities intrigue me, you are quite honestly inferior, mentally, physically. In fact, I am surprised how little improvement there has been in human evolution. Oh, there has been technical advancement, but how little man himself has changed.
Lance Reddick loved TV growing up and was a super fan of the original Star Trek. The actor, currently seen as Deputy Chief Irvin Irving on Amazon Prime Video's Bosch, and as Christian DeVille on Comedy Central's Corporate, recently sat down with My Favorite Episode to discuss what Star Trek meant to him and how he wound up on so many iconic TV and film franchises. We began by discussing what made him pick Space Seed, which is generally considered one of the best episodes of the original Star Trek ever. So, Lance, there are many reasons why I love that you picked this episode. But, you know, first off, because this was the episode that introduced Khan.
Yes.
Played by Ricardo Montalban, of course.
Yeah.
One of the greatest villains of all time and iconic. And, you know, and of course, he continued that role in the movie in The Wrath of Khan. But this was our first... Yeah. For first evidence of this character and really considered one of the greatest episodes of Star Trek ever. Always ends up on the list as one of the two or three greatest episodes.
I didn't know that, but I'm not surprised.
Yeah. So what made you pick this episode?
I think it's nostalgia. It's weird because when I was trying to decide what my favorite episode of all time was, I think that was the first one that popped up.
Uh-huh.
Because when I was a kid and I would watch Star Trek in reruns, I would always wait for that episode.
Yeah.
And it took me a while to realize how much I loved the chemistry that Montalban and Shatner had.
Yeah.
It was just, you know, growing up, I kind of wanted to be Captain Kirk.
Yeah.
So to see him up against somebody who was really his match, if not his superior in every way.
Yeah.
It's just cool.
Yeah, this superhuman character who had been genetically engineered to be just superior in all ways.
Yeah.
And is
although that they said selective breeding, so
yeah,
it wasn't.
That's true.
Yeah. But it probably now would be genetic engineering.
Yeah. 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 But nonetheless, what did Ricardo Montalban and Khan make an impression on you? That character, you're known for playing some heavy characters.
I just thought he was cool. I mean, even the way that he outthought, he basically put him in checkmate when they were on the bridge.
Yeah.
He basically figured out every single contingency that Kirk could think of, just because he studied the technical manuals while he was lying in his quote unquote sick bed.
Yeah.
There's just something about Ricardo Montalban in that episode that is just, I mean, I hate to keep coming back to that word, but just cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because you have an amazing voice and he had an amazing voice. Remember, he was like a spokesperson for
yeah, that's true.
With the fine Corinthian leather, which I forget which auto that was that he sold, but he was known for just, and of course on Fantasy Island, smiles, everyone. But he had like this commanding voice and presence. And, you know, and when I think of you, I think of a commanding voice and a commanding presence.
Oh, thank you.
So and it's always just fun to hear you just say words, just to read scripts. But were you drawn, as you started to consider acting, were you drawn to those kind of characters was there anything in sort of those sort of larger than life characters that inspired you back in the day?
I grew up addicted to television.
Yeah.
I came of age in the 70s. When TV had really was becoming kind of a full blown part of our culture, and there was always something about, being a little boy at the time. I mean, in the '60s, like, westerns were huge, and then they started to wane in the '70s, and they were taken over by the cop shows, and particularly private detective shows. but it was it's interesting to me that. When I go back and I listen to Gene Roddenberry talk about the reboot of the Star Trek pilot, the first was, of course, I can't think of the name of the actor who played Christopher Pike in the original pilot. Mm-hmm. And then it's interesting because from watching it, when I watched the original pilot, it looks much more like The Next Generation than anything that came after it in the original series. And, when I heard Roddenberry say Westerns were really big at the time, so basically they wanted us to make a Western in space with Kirk shooting guns and fighting people and getting girls.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's interesting because I didn't really start – I mean, I didn't really start acting until I was in college, and I didn't even think about being an actor professionally until I was 27. But, whenever I'm asked about kind of my early influences – on kind of what made me want to be an actor, it was William Shatner.
Yeah.
And it was this weird thing where I remember reading about him. At one point, I became a little obsessed with him. And so I was reading about his background as an actor and found that he'd been a Shakespearean actor. And so I started – my father had this old volume of Shakespeare plays from when he was in college, lying around in the den. Uh-huh. And so I would I remember opening that up randomly and – finding the speech by Brutus in Julius Caesar, where he addresses the crowd before Mark Antony comes and kind of takes over.
Yeah.
And this is when I was in high school. I don't know. I was maybe 14 years old. And I opened up. I'd never read any of the plays. And I opened up to the big speech that Brutus has in front of the crowd after Caesar's been killed from Julius Caesar. And I started trying to do it the way I thought Captain Kirk would do it.
Yeah. did you do the inflections too?
Well, it's funny because I didn't really at that point I hadn't really noticed kind of the unique way he kind
of spark.
Yeah, and also that stuff I feel like he started doing that more second third season. Like where he kind of started becoming a parody of himself as the show went on.
Yeah. The
first season, most of his stuff was pretty natural.
Yeah, yeah. So you're a big Star Trek fan. Would you call yourself, is it Trekker, right? It's not Trekkie. So it is Trekkie. I know there's like the back and forth. Like some people are like, Trekker sounds cooler than Trekkie.
Oh, well, you know more than I do. I mean, I haven't heard them.
So, but you're a full-fledged Trekkie.
I don't know if I'd say full-fledged Trekkie. Yeah. I'm a huge Next Generation fan, and I only really discovered Next Generation a few years ago. I didn't watch it really when it was on.
Yeah.
Because when it originally aired back in the 80s, I just thought, he's not Captain Kirk, and this isn't Star Trek. I don't know what this is.
Yeah, you're a purist at the time.
At the time, not realizing that was much closer to Roddenberry's original version, vision. But then I got hooked, completely hooked on Voyager in the 90s.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So, and then you went back and re-binged some of Next Gen.
No, I went back and I actually watched the entire series.
Yeah.
Yeah, on Netflix.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. And how about some of the other series? Did you get into Deep Space Nine?
I never really got into Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I didn't really get into Enterprise either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then of course there's the new one that's.
Yes, which I haven't seen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you haven't been on a Star Trek.
I have not.
So that needs to be rectified.
Yes. And it's funny because when Enterprise, when they were casting, I was so desperate to get seen for that show.
Yeah.
But I wasn't. But it was fine.
That's fine. You've done your definitely plenty of sci-fi in your day. Yeah. So in some ways, some original shows, of course, Fringe that everyone remembers well. But take me back real quick to as a kid. So you discovered Star Trek in repeats.
No. I actually watched it when it was like I was a little.
Like
I was in
when it was originally in the late 60s.
Yeah, when I was in elementary school.
Oh, wow. So So how did you discover it?
It was just one of those. I don't even remember. I remember it most on Saturday nights, which is, I think, was their last season when they got pushed to Saturday nights and they knew that, we're done.
Yeah.
At that time, Saturday nights was like the death of a show.
Yeah.
And then I started watching it in reruns when it started being in syndication a few years later.
Yeah.
Mostly on like Saturday and Sunday afternoons.
Yeah. So and so clearly made an impression on you.
Yeah, I just love that stuff. Like I said, I was in some ways, I was a typical boy, and then I just, and also I grew up, even though I have I had an older brother who's much older than I am, but I didn't really grow up with him because he was 20 years older than I am.
Oh, wow.
So I grew up an only child. So I did a lot of playing and pretend on my own.
Yeah.
So I would do these elaborate scenarios, and it was always either a Western or a Private Eye.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was kind of obsessed with that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So, and then carrying on, like, did you watch, were you into the movies at all? Did you see Wrath of Khan when it came out?
I did. Yeah. I did. I loved it.
Yeah. And the whole idea of the continuation of this character and.
I couldn't wait.
Yeah.
I couldn't wait.
Yeah. And so going back to this episode, I mean, anything else that sort of stood out in terms of just the themes, what they were trying to get at the time? I mean, of course, Star Trek famously was all about an allegory to society and how we live now. And
one of the things that was so interesting to me about that original series, I was talking to my wife about it, is how, because you don't see this in the pilot, because Michelle Roddenberry actually played the first officer in the original pilot.
Mm-hmm.
But how, given how much how often they addressed race and ethnicity in the show, and how difficult that is, how misogynistic it was.
Yeah,
show was. Yeah. So it's really weird, because when I went back to watch the episode again for at least the 20th time, when I was preparing for this interview, the historian, I can't remember the name.
Yeah, Marla McGivers.
Well. It's actually MacGyvers. He always pronounced her name wrong, MacGyvers, and she had to correct him. Yeah, MacGyvers. I don't remember the name of the actress who played her.
Yeah, I had it here. Madeline Rue.
Yeah, it's funny. I only ever saw her one other time, and it was on an episode of Mannix.
Really?
Yeah.
So from the era as well.
Yeah. But one of the things that I found so interesting about that episode was there's this great scene they have in the conference room. It's Spock, Scotty, McCoy, and Kirk, and they've got his picture up on the screen from the. Now, why they couldn't pull this picture up before, I don't know, but they pull this picture up on the screen from historical records, and so they know who he is. Khan Noonien Singh is his full name, And they're talking about how stable his rule was. And Spock is talking about how oppressive it was. And they're arguing with him, and he's like, "Gentlemen, and Kirk has this great line. You know, they all start laughing, and Kirk has this great line. He said, "You misunderstand us. We can admire him and be against him all at the same time."
Yeah,
yeah.
That is a great line.
Yeah.
So, and you know, interestingly that you mentioned the misogynism of you know, you sort of see obviously shows of that era, but that's probably the biggest sort of criticism this episode has in how the historian character is sort of treated as so
episode, yeah,
subservient yeah. And
I mean, to the point where when his physical abuse of her is seen, it was very much kind of in that 60s Sean Connery, James Bond tone of treating women, abusing them makes them want you more because they admire and respect masculine power.
Yeah,
that kind of thing.
Yeah. So I mean, you could say that at the very least, the franchise has tried to make up for it over the years by empowering more women, and of course now Star Trek Discovery with you know, Sinequa Green at sort of the center, Sinequa Martin Green at the center as the star of this new Star Trek. And
Voyager, the woman ran the show.
Yeah.
They ran the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, the most smartest, most powerful characters on the show were the women.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the black guy.
Exactly. So Star Trek in some ways, you know, has evolved just as society has evolved.
Yeah.
What else did you watch back in the day? What you said you're a big TV fan, so.
Oh, gosh. When I was a little kid, I mean it's funny because my wife is a little younger than I am, and she, not just that, but, you know, I don't mean to play the stereotypes, but she just wasn't into West. Well, she loved Bonanza. She did love that.
Yeah.
But a show that I loved was Big Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And I also loved The Wild Wild West.
Wow. So yeah. So this made sense that you went from the westerns to the space westerns.
Yeah.
So it kind of fit the your taste.
Yeah.
In a moment, Lance Reddick on his acting history and what to expect in a busy 2019 for the actor. From Variety, this is My Favorite Episode.
This is Daniel Holloway. Join me every Friday for TV Take, Variety's podcast about the television business. In every episode, we feature interviews with stars and showrunners from today's hit shows, as well as conversations with Variety journalists about the key TV headlines of the day. Subscribe or download to TV Take wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. It's My Favorite Episode. I'm Michael Schneider, and Lance Reddick is our guest. Season 5 of Bosch returns to Amazon Prime Video on April 19, while a Season 6 has already been ordered. Reddick plays Deputy Chief Irving, West Bureau Commanding Officer of the LAPD's Hollywood Division. Titus Welliver is Los Angeles Police Department Homicide Detective Harry Bosch on the show.
Welcome to Hollywood Homicide.
Definitely smell undercover.
That's the idea.
Have you ever done this before?
I'm not going to be under that long. Find my killers and adios.
Maybe we should hit pause, call in the DEA.
Let them bust the pill mill after we're done.
You won't have a weapon and you may need one.
Kane, seriously?
Twist the top and pull. Can you do compliance?
I'm famous for it.
Did you work the Skylar murder case?
20 years ago, why?
They're investigating it.
There are two kinds of truth. The kind that gets bent and manipulated for someone's self-interest. And the kind you carry inside and know is real.
Should I be worried?
Don't do anything stupid. You're all I have left.
Growing up in Baltimore, acting wasn't even a consideration for Lance Reddick as a child.
Well, because I never thought about being an actor.
Yeah.
I mean, I grew up, I was never really that much into school, but I grew up studying music. So I started playing piano when I was 6. I started studying classical piano when I was 6 years old. Mm-hmm. And then all the way through elementary school and junior high school and high school. And then when I was in high school, every summer I started going to a music camp that was geared toward composition. So when I went to college, I went to music school. I went to conservatory. I went to Eastman School of Music.
Yeah.
I thought I was going to be a classical composer. And I left because I realized that I was in denial and I really wanted to be a rock star. But all through that, you know, I acted and I did one play in high school. It's really interesting. The first time I realized that I had a knack for acting was when I was 15. In English class, we had to do, we were reading Macbeth. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why, but the teacher gave us this assignment to pick a monologue and learn it and act it out for the class. And I did the If It Were Done When 'Tis Done speech. And I don't know how to describe it, but there, because at the time I didn't even really like reading. And I don't even think I ever read the play. But I just loved learning that speech and creating that character. And so when I did it, it was clear to me, and the teacher even said that I was doing something that the other kids weren't.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? I tried to just talk. I wasn't reciting it. I actually tried to just talk and be the guy.
Yeah.
And then 2 years later, my senior year, I auditioned for a production of Fiorello. I came really close to playing his chief of staff, and I ended up getting cast as the car dealer, so I had two lines. But then when I got into college, my first year was at the University of Rochester before I transferred to Eastman, and I just said, you know what? I'm going to be good at this. This would be fun. So I just started acting in plays, and I did that all through college.
Yeah,
but it was just for fun.
Because you still wanted to be the rock star.
Yeah, well, at that point, my first year I was actually a physics major. But even then, I mean, acting, it's so funny because there was a guy, after I transferred to Eastman, I actually took an English class over at the U of R that was, believe it or not, the class was putting on a Shakespearean production. So the English professor actually was the director. I don't remember his name. I remember he was blind. That was interesting. But and I played Antonio, the sea captain. And the guy who played the prince, I can't remember his name. This is going like 30 years. But I remember he was, it's interesting because we both played football in high school. We both had a history of a particular autoimmune disease. And he was obsessed being an actor. He was obsessed with going to the Yale School of Drama. And I'd never heard of the Yale School of Drama until he brought it up.
Yeah.
And I thought, we really got along. We were friends. He actually ended up directing me in another play my next year. But I just thought, man, people want to be actors. That was the silliest thing in the world.
Yeah.
And I just thought, well, he's obsessed with going to this one school. I mean, there must be a bunch of schools. And then, you know, lo and behold, 10 years later, I'm at the Yale School of Drama. So you just never know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. When did you sort of flip that switch? When did you realize this was it? Was there a moment where you felt like, okay,
no,
this is the path?
I actually started acting as a move of desperation because I thought it would help my music career.
Yeah.
About a year after my daughter was born, I had a back injury and laid me up for a good 2 weeks. And at the time I was working three part-time jobs. So I was working 7 days a week. And, you know, while I was on my back convalescing, I realized that I had to face some facts. I had been working with a recording studio at this point it had been a couple of years. And I had to realize, you know, I had to be honest with myself that they were just taking me for a ride and I was never going to get a record deal.
Yeah.
That I was going to have to figure out something else. And I realized I didn't have any contacts. I didn't have any money. So I thought, well, you know I can sing, I know I can act. So let me try that. So I just opened up the local trades in Boston Phoenix, which is their version of the Village Voice.
Yeah.
And I just started going on local theater auditions. I went on, I think, at least one, maybe two musical theater auditions. And right away I realized, like, this is not me. These people are, I have a nice voice. These people are singers.
Mm-hmm.
Then I went on a straight acting audition. And my first audition was for, I can't remember the name of the play, but it was a Tennessee Williams play. And it was at this little, this tiny theater. And you had to prepare two contrasting monologues. And I didn't have any monologues. So there was a show on at the time called The Bronx Zoo, starring Ed Asner, where he plays this principal, this new principal in the school in South Bronx. And I was hooked on that show. Like I would videotape that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'd watch it on the weekends when I had time. And so I had some episodes on tape. And I just remember, for some reason, two monologues came to my mind immediately. One is this monologue that Ed Asner had at the very end of the pilot, where he's on the verge of being kicked out because the parents are so mad at him because he's trying to make the kids actually learn stuff and have discipline.
Uh-huh.
And so it's this monologue he's got in front of the school board. And then there was another episode where this kid has he had gotten a full ride scholarship to Princeton, and then he ends up getting in an altercation with a kid and getting and shooting the kid and over drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a scene at the end of that episode where he talks about his experience going to visit Princeton and how he realized he didn't fit in and how awful it was. And interestingly enough, at the time, the guy who played the gym teacher was Michael T. Williamson.
Mm.
And the guy who played the kid was a 19-year-old Cuba Gooding Jr.
Wow, wow. Yeah.
So I took my tape recorder out. I played those scenes on TV. I taped it. And then I learned the monologues from the tape. And then I did those monologues, one as the principal and one as the street kid.
Yeah.
And after the audition was over, the director said to me, "Wow, that's acting. Where did you study?" And I was like, "No place. My first straight audition ever."
And you watched a lot of TV.
But. Yeah. So that was the beginning of what I really thought. Man, this may have something here.
By the way, I'm taken aback by like the title of that show. Can you imagine calling a show about like high school kids now, the Bronx Zoo? How offensive
that is.
Oh, yeah.
It's funny because when I said it, I've never thought anything of it. But when I said it out loud to you, I thought, oh, wow, that'd be kind of racist.
Yeah. How different times.
Yeah.
Wow. So cut to the chase in terms of what would you say was the real breakthrough, like the role or the moment where you sort of felt like you'd established yourself like in television or just like in acting, period?
The role when I feel like I established myself in acting, I don't know. Because I was fortunate. I mean, I started working pretty much straight out of school.
Yeah.
So, I mean, 2 weeks after I graduated, I was understudying on Broadway. And then I went straight from that to an off-Broadway show that ran for a year.
Yeah.
But as a television, I'd probably say The Wire.
Yeah.
I mean, my first really big break was Oz.
Yeah.
But The Wire was when I realized that my life was going to, even when I got it, before the show had even been shot and picked up, I knew that my life was going to be different.
Right. That was the show. Yeah. And I was going to ask you, by the way, when people like come up to you, like the classic question of what do they ask you about the most? What generally do they cite?
How to answer that because for a while it was kind of 50-50, The Wire or Fringe.
Mm-hmm.
But now it could be, it could be Bosch. It's funny on social media, there's some people, they'll see me in something and they only know me from Destiny. So they call me from the character that I play in that video game. But it seems like a lot of times people only know me from one thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And it maybe depends what their taste is because you've had this opportunity now and even just looking at your IMDb, how diverse the kind of projects you've done over the past, say, 5 years has been, you know, comedy, drama, sci-fi. It seems to be like, you know, we're here actually to talk about corporate, but it could have been just as much about Bosch or, you know.
Some people just know me from John Wick.
So exactly.
Some people just know me from Lost.
Yeah. Yeah.
I only did 4 episodes.
Yeah. But that was such an iconic show.
At the time that I came into it, it was like the hottest show on network television.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and now it's fun to see you like dabble in comedy as well. And
this has been fun.
Yeah.
Corporate's been a fantastic experience.
Yeah. And, you know, speaking of like Shakespearean, like you're able to sort of, you know, in playing this character be like, you know, the at least like one, every episode there's one line or something that you get to do or say that I could just tell is a lot of just so much fun for you to do.
So many of them. It's funny. I remember, I think it was when we were shooting. I don't know if it was when we were shooting the second season or if when it was, after it was sometime after the first season. and I was talking to, I think it was to Jake Wiseman. And he said, sometimes we just love writing the most convoluted monologues to see what you do with them.
Keeping you on your toes.
Yeah, yeah.
So what do you make of Christian DeVille? I mean, he's a fun, juicy character. And the thing is, he's you're in a comedy, but you get to be, again, like very Shakespearean on this show.
It's funny. In some ways, more just in terms of the way that I talk, in some ways more Shakespearean than anything I've ever done.
Yeah. And
I mean, I think he's a borderline psychopath.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or at least he rates very high on the psychopath scale.
Yeah.
The thing that's kind of scary about him is that I don't know that that's a lot different from a lot of CEOs of multinational corporations. I mean, I know I'm doing a parody of him. I mean, the character is kind of a parody. But by the same token, you know, there were two things that I happened to be looking at. Well, one thing I happened to be looking at when I was cast, and this has fascinated me for years, just kind of how the minds of psychopaths work, mm-hmm. And how far from, like, very few psychopaths are serial killers, and that the most, as far as I know, the kind of the most recent notion of the way that psychopathy, but I don't know if that's a word, works is that there's a scale, and you can either be kind of high or low on the scale. And people that tend to be high on the scale are like special forces, mm-hmm. A lot of gangsters, particularly killers or bosses, a lot of CEOs.
Yeah. And certain presidents of the United States.
Well, yeah, I would say so.
Yeah. So it seems like you're having fun though. Probably sort of.
I'm having a great time.
Diving into this.
Because the other thing about it, it's not just there's two things about it that's great. One is just how fun it is to play the character, but the other thing is how great it is to be a part of what they're doing. Because I feel like in addition to being really funny, it's a show that's got something. It's an important commentary about life.
Yeah.
Today.
Yeah, yeah,
and we're living in right
life
now.
Business and
yeah. I mean, I think it's a very political show.
Yeah, yeah, politics. Social interaction. There's one episode early in season two where you buy a television, like a news network, and so there's commentary on what's happened to
yes.
You know, and I, you know, as a journalist, like that's one that, you know, we're struggling with all the time is just what has happened to journalism and the media and how depressing is this?
You know, there's a really great line. Speaking of that episode, there's a really great line that I have when I'm in my first scene of the first episode of season two with Robert Morris, where I'm trying to get Robert Morris to sell the company to me. And, I say to him, you know, I look on his back wall and there's a plaque that says the pen is mightier than the sword. And I ask him if he knows who said it. And of course he knows. And I say, you know how he died, right? He got his head cut off with a sword. And he's like, I don't think that's true. I say, see, that's the nice thing about owning your own news organization. You get to decide what's true.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I read that and I was like, chilling.
Channeling your inner Rupert Murdoch right there.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's and that's what's been kind of special about corporate is, and I think the reviews have sort of expressed this, is that it's not the show that you expect. It's a very different kind of comedy, and very, very smart, very elevated kind of comedy. What are you looking for now? What kind of things excite you in terms of projects that, come your way? Is there anything that you look for these days when you commit to a show or a film?
Now, more than anything else, well, I shouldn't say more than anything else. There are a couple of things. I mean, I'm really looking to kind of produce the kinds of shows that I want to see, mm-hmm. that I'd love to see. In terms of the kind of I'm looking to do something different. Because I feel like, you know, it's interesting. I almost said no to corporate. Because when I read the, first of all, when I read the pilot on the page, I just didn't get it.
Uh-huh.
But the other thing was, I said, you know, I don't, it's just, it's another asshole boss in a suit. And my agent at the time, she said, well, no, this is a different asshole boss. This is, you know.
Yeah.
But I feel like I want to play a regular guy. Because when you asked me earlier about kind of playing characters that are larger than life, I feel like I've done that a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you're a big guy. Do you feel like you're a little pigeonholed because of that, or because you've been known to play these sort of larger?
Well, it's more that.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that changed after The Wire.
Uh-huh.
Because interestingly enough, when I first went to my whole round of auditions for The Wire, originally I went in for Bunk, but on my third audition for Bunk, David asked me to read Bubbles on the spot. But the reason he asked me to read Bubbles on the spot is because I'd worked with him in the miniseries I did before called The Corner, mm-hmm. where I played a crackhead. And the year before on Oz, I played a heroin addict. So, and also at the time I'm a much bigger guy now, but at the time I was very thin.
Mm.
So it was an easy fit. So they actually didn't want to see me for Daniels. But then ever since I played Daniels, it's kind of like that's what people.
Because that's what Hollywood does, right? Yeah, it's hard to break free from that.
Yeah.
So, obviously you're doing pretty well for yourself.
Oh, no, don't get me wrong. I've been very fortunate. Yeah, I've been very fortunate.
So what's coming up? Anything that you can talk about that you're excited about that you've done recently or that we're going to be seeing in the coming year?
Let me see. Canal Street, which is a film I did actually 2 years ago. Where I play the head of a law firm. Speaking of Michael T. Williamson, he's one of the two leads. And that just came out this week in select theaters across the country. It's about an attorney who's moved he's a widower and he has moved his son to an affluent part of Chicago, and he's going to a private school, and it's all about kind of dealing with race, and then there's a murder and kind of, you know, he's accused of it, and it's all about the politics of race in the criminal justice system. Then I did another film's coming out that I did 2 years ago called Little Woods, starring Tessa Thompson and Lily. I can't think of her last name, but it's about two sisters, I actually played Tessa's parole officer.
Mm.
And I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, film. Yeah, I love Tessa.
Not so much for the role, because that was one of those things where I didn't say yes because of the role. I said yes because of the project.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I read the script, I thought, wow, this person really has something to say. And then I met with the writer-director, Nia DaCosta, and I just fell in love with her. And then when I found out Tessa was playing the lead, I was like, yeah, man.
Yeah, you're in. That's great.
Yeah. So. And once again, it's a political piece. It's very important. It's about... people in a dying oil. I can't remember if it's timber or oil. I haven't seen the film, and I haven't read the script in 2 years. But I think it's it's not coal mine, but I think it's an oil town, and they don't have nobody can afford health insurance. So it's about the selling of illegal prescription drugs for people so that they can survive.
So very timely.
Yeah.
Very very timely.
And then John Wick 3 comes out in May. And Angel Has Fallen comes out, not sure I heard August, but that may, it may move to the fall.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Those John Wick movies, man.
Yeah.
They.
And then season 5 of Bosch comes out in the spring sometime.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Corporate season 2 going on right now.
Yep.
And we'll keep fingers crossed for season 3. So
your mouth to God's ears.
Another big year for Lance Reddick.
Knock on wood.
So feeling good. Well, Lance, thank you so much for dropping by, and congrats on everything. And we'll look forward to what's next.
Thanks.
And that's it for this edition of My Favorite Episode. Join us again next time as we once again explore another guest pick.
And be sure to subscribe to My Favorite Episode on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or anywhere you download podcasts. Also, head on over to Variety.com for your daily fix of TV news, analysis, and reviews. I'm Michael Schneider, and we'll see you again next time.